We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrandt, that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, still in sunny Southern California. Happy Friday! June the 19th, thank you for stopping on by, for coming on back to talk more college football. We announced it on the Wednesday show. We'd be dropping a show this Friday. Friday has come, Dan, and I'm excited about today's show.
Well, certainly, Ty, I am as well. And that's for a number of reasons. One, we get to nerd out. I get to nerd out over, I guess, Oregon football, but not really. It's just offense in general, X's and O's stuff in general. Joe Moorhead joining the show. Very excited to catch back up with him. We spoke to him a couple years ago. But perhaps even more importantly for me, Ty, I just took a coffee nap.
Oh.
And I feel great. I feel great. So if you want to solve a bunch of world problems right now before we get into news and before we get into X's and O's scheme
ready
theme stuff,
it.
Lay it on me. Lay it on me. I'm ready.
Well, if you are tuning in for the first time or one of many times, please do subscribe to the show. You can find us out on Spotify, on Apple, on Google, anywhere you get your podcasts. You can find the Solid Verbal. We are ramping up. Go back and listen to Wednesday or subscribe to the newsletter. We sent it out there as well. You can also follow along with all the fun we're having out on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter right now. We're also going to be doing some stuff on YouTube. We experimented with that through the start of the pandemic,
yeah.
But we're trying to really work up our YouTube presence. And of course, if you enjoy the conversation we have on the show and you want to talk to others in the Verballerhood who are in the same boat, going out to solidverbal.reddit.com, our teaming community of Verballers that
yes.
is so gracefully moderated by our good friend Peter Hoffman.
Yeah, and I would also stress that our show is intended to be listened to at normal speed. Every so often, we get an email from somebody saying, did you guys smoke a lot or drink a lot because you're slurring your words?
Yeah.
Or sometimes we'll get an email that says, Ty, you got to slow down. Dan, you're going a mile a minute, and we really need you to pause between sentences. And it turns out they're listening at two or three times
yeah.
speed.
Yeah, I don't know how that happens. It has happened to
yeah.
me using various apps, but every now and again, you're right. We got one a couple weeks ago. A gentleman listened and said, "Wow, Dan, you talk too fast. You got to slow it down. You're broadcasters. You seem like you're talking normal speed to me."
Yeah.
And sometimes technology plays tricks on us. That's part of the beauty in it. On today's show, we're going to discuss some news tidbits, and then we're going to get into a wonderful interview. My question for you, though, is, am I able to play my news hit?
Yeah, I think so. Sure.
I'm not going to yell breaking news because I'm not feeling it today. Not feeling that chipper yet, but we got to introduce the sound back in and get things started off on the right foot. Serious subject, though, to start here. 13 Texas players have tested positive for COVID-19. All 13 of them are now self-isolating. 10 more players were identified through contact tracing. They're also in self-quarantine, but asymptomatic at this time, according to a statement from the university. My sense is that this is going to be the first in a long line of stories that take on a similar tone. We're going to see this all over the country, love it or hate it. I guess the upshoot for Texas is that maybe like a quarter of their teams already had it. You know, I don't really know how I feel about this. On one hand, I want there to be football. On the other, sure, I have real serious concerns about whether or not they can do it safely. So, you know, we'll see where it goes from here. I did see that some schools are having guys sign waivers, right? Things of that nature. We're kind of wading into this murky, almost legal territory now because of the ongoing coronavirus risk. So certainly more to come on this front, Dan.
Yeah, and then the waivers are a little tricky. I'm not sure how much waivers hold up in court. This is me, definite non-lawyer, saying this. But it's also going to be very hard to prove if somebody comes down with something that, you know, a coach or a trainer or a medical staff within a football program was negligent on some level.
Right.
And how do you prove that somebody contracted it from football activities or normal everyday academic or social activities? So it's definitely a murky territory. I'm seeing, you know, some schools have been doing better than others in terms of the number of kids and the percentage of people testing positive. I guess the one real silver lining positive thing is this is happening in mid-June. And there is at least a runway for schools and training staffs to really perfect best practices health-wise, you know, whether it's the isolating, whether it's treatment, whether it's figuring out new protocols to ensure the best possible safety option for athletes that are testing positive, be that symptomatic or asymptomatic. So it's good that nobody's having to throw everything together, even though nobody's practicing right now. There are true football activities happening. So once that starts, that's going to be a whole new situation. But at least right now, when you have this voluntary workout period, that there are medical steps being taken that can be honed and crafted to best protect athletes. That's to me the silver lining, that, you know, there can be some sort of well-oiled machine by the time things get pretty serious.
Yeah. And again, I hate to keep saying it, but truly we'll see where this goes. We hope everyone that contracted this is on the road, on the mend, on the road to recovery, because scary thing. Obviously been very much in the news here, and hope everyone feels better soon. Elsewhere in the world of college football, we have Florida making an announcement. They are going to stop the Gator Bait cheer and associated band performance. There's a racist history of the term. They announced it on Thursday. So, you know, given current climate and obviously given the more significant nature of the chant and the history thereof, they have decided to cease that, which I think is a good move.
Yeah, it seems to make sense. I know there's always going to be pushback and there's going to be people out there questioning like, oh, this sports are canceled pretty much. You can't say these very basic, unoffending, non-offending things. I actually thought our pal Richard Johnson put it really succinctly, that Florida out of nowhere created a new tradition with Tom Petty, the Tom Petty song they played between the third and fourth quarters.
Yeah.
It's Won't Back Down. There's no reason why they can't just sort of tweak and alter. And if Gator Bait has racial undertones that people weren't aware of, I know it was associated with a prison release and work program that sort of dehumanized prisoners in a certain way, I'm fine with it. Like, just life evolves. Things change and we move forward. And if that includes adding Tom Petty to any sort of traditional rotation,
I'm fine with that.
Totally good.
Totally good. All right. NAIA schools are prohibited from playing before September the 12th, which means there have been some scheduling changes, some cancellations. We had Southern against Tennessee State. We had Jackson State against Tennessee State and Southern against Florida A&M on September the 12th. Those games have, I guess, been straight up canceled now?
They've been straight up canceled. It's something worth monitoring, at least for the short term. Obviously, smaller schools are going to have less in the way of resources health-wise, and so they're taking precautions. I hope everything works out, Ty. That's all I'm hoping for, and I'm hoping everybody stays as safe as humanly possible. But yeah, those are our first real major cancellations that we've seen. Even though those are smaller schools, anytime we have less college football because of a situation like this, it is worth noting.
Elsewhere in scheduling news, we have news that Ohio State and Alabama have scheduled a home and home, Dan.
Yeah, man.
In 2027 and 2028,
sure.
I did the math, Nick Saban would be 75 years old for the first of these games.
Yeah.
Will he still be at Alabama when he's 75 years old?
I don't think so. I think
I'm
this
going
is
with, no.
What a Billy Napier, Luke Fickle matchup, a Matt Campbell, Jeremy Pruitt, or Mario Cristobal matchup. I couldn't see either coach, especially if Ryan Day continues his trajectory at this point. And having the brief NFL past he has, it feels like a two different coach matchup. By the way, though, Ty, this is all burying the most important part of this, which is hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Ohio State
and Alabama are playing a home and home. That is going to be enormous. That is going to be so incredibly fun to watch just for the energy in the stadium when you have, I can't remember the last time to, I mean, we've had some Clemson Georgia matchups, but neither one of those teams were really, really national title contenders at the same time when they were matching up. I don't believe USC and Alabama played and will continue to play, hopefully this year. But they haven't really crossed over as national powers. I'm trying to remember the last time two national powers, true national powers, that ended up playing at the start of a season in September and were also looking like they could be November names, because I do like alliteration, at the same time. So hopefully that's still the case in 2027, 2028. Ty, you will be well into your 40s.
Yeah, yep. I'm looking at it right now here. I'm doing some back of the napkin math. Yeah. And if I am correct, yeah, we'll be in our 40s. But this could potentially be a matchup between a 57-year-old Dabo Swinney and a 35-year-old Tommy Reese. Never know.
Whoa.
Never good. Know.
Good math, Ty. Good math. And then I think I saw Wazoo and Mississippi State have scheduled a home-and-home 2030-2031.
Mike Leach will not be there for that game.
No, he most certainly will not be.
Saying that much.
Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and agree with you on that one, Ty. Yeah, he won't be there.
And finally, for our news segment this evening, Duke's mayonnaise. Initially, I read this as the school, Duke. Their mayonnaise, but apparently Duke's mayonnaise is a brand.
What do you mean, apparently? Come on.
I didn't know that.
Really? You didn't know Duke's mayo? It's a famous mayo brand.
Never heard of Duke's. I've heard of Hellman's.
Wait until I introduce you to Japanese mayo, Ty.
New title sponsor of the regular season college football game and postseason bowl game played in Charlotte. They are taking over for Belk, which means, Dan, that on September the 26th at Bank of America Stadium, the Duke's Mayo Classic will feature Wake Forest and the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. So
great.
I've been part and parcel to a Pinstripe Bowl, and now it looks like I'm going to get a Duke's Mayo Classic that I can talk about as well.
Somebody send us a Duke's Mayo Classic hat. Please, please, please. I don't know if they're going to be selling them in bookstores for, what is it, late September? A late September matchup, but please do send it to us. And it's too bad Mike Elko is not a part of it, having made that journey from Winston-Salem to South Bend.
The Duke's Mayo Bowl will be held at Bank of America Stadium as well. Obviously, we'll figure out who plays in that game, typically between teams from the ACC and the Big Ten. Sometimes the SEC.
You a Mayo guy?
Because
I know it can be
spots.
Very divisive on social media.
Yeah, in spots. I've been places around the country where they're very aggressive with their mayo. I'm not an aggressive mayo type, but mixed in with a good like burger sauce or something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Potato salad? Are you good with that?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Need the right proportion though of mayo. If you're over the top with it, I'm not interested, but I think in my old age here, I've come around on it.
I do like mayo a good deal, Ty. I do like mayo a good deal. Burger sauce, non-burger sauce, potato salad, turkey sandwich. Hit me with some mayo for sure. I'm in.
So here is the deal. You can always email us at solidverbal@gmail.com. Let us know what you think about what we have to say and where we should go next. We're always interested in your feedback. But one of the things that we've gotten time and again during the off season is folks want to talk more with coaches and hear more from the guys who are calling the plays and drawing up the schemes. And we've got one of those today, don't we?
Not just, we've got a pretty major one too in Joe Moorhead, who not just from what he's accomplished, be it at way back when at UConn, yes, UConn, the Jordan Todman 2010 offense, that's the Joe Moorhead offense, Ty, at Fordham, took over a team that went 1-10 and led them to Patriot League glory. And then we all remember what he did at Penn State with Trace McSorley and Saquon Barkley and your guy, what, Mike Gesicki?
Yeah.
That's your secret guy, right?
Hans Gesicki.
Hans Gesicki.
Right.
It didn't work out at Mississippi State, but certainly a star like Kylan Hill thrived during Joe Moorhead's time at Mississippi State. And now he is the current offensive coordinator, recently hired for my Oregon Ducks. So it really, he does bridge the gap. I live in New York, home of Fordham, New York's one true team. And then he's at Penn State and Oregon. So it's as close, I would assume, as a coach who can bridge the college football gap between us, right?
I think that's right.
Yes.
I think that's right.
Okay.
I'm excited about this interview. Again, going out to Instagram, going out to Twitter, going out to Facebook or Reddit, anywhere you can find the Solid Verbal. And let us know your thoughts after the fact. But without further ado, Dan, shall we dive in?
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And with that, I welcome in brand new Oregon offensive coordinator, formerly of Mississippi State, Penn State, and obviously, most importantly, the Fordham Rams, Joe Moorhead. I guess first, how'd the cross-country move go during a pandemic?
We bought an RV and packed everyone in, including the dog, and made the 44-hour drive just under a week. But it was there were some National Lampoon Vacation moments, but overall it was a positive experience.
This is with wife and with kids all in the same car?
Wife, two kids, and a dog in an RV, yes, sir.
So, other than everything, how is your job right now? How is your profession? I imagine night and day from what you're used to, at least this time of year.
I mean, it's been surreal in a lot of ways. You know, things were going it was standard kind of operating procedure up until our fourth spring ball practice. And that's when everything kind of hit and things started getting shut down. And I had already planned to go back to Mississippi for spring break because the family was still there finishing out the school year. And
right.
You know, since that time, everything's been virtual, doing everything, you know, recruiting, position meetings, all that stuff on Zoom. And it's just been, you know, it's like you said, it's been a crazy time.
So things don't work out in Starkville, which I'm sure leaves you disappointed, to say the least. What kind of timeline do you have to sort of process things there, reflect on everything, and then figure out what's next from both, I guess, a coaching and family perspective?
Yeah, I mean, you can make the argument. I mean, ultimately, it didn't work out because I was let go, but I'm certainly proud of the things we did there. You know, average seven wins a year, which was just as many as my predecessor. My two-year record was one game better in the regular season than the 2 years before I arrived. Two bowls, three top 25 recruiting classes, two wins over top 25 teams. So I keep my head held high and proud of what we did with the kids. But, you know, things happen in this profession, and you know, that's, those are things you just have to deal with. But, you know, as a family, we kind of regrouped. You know, after I got let go, you know, it wasn't a very long amount of time before people at the college level and the NFL level were reaching out with opportunities. And, you know, as a family, we felt Oregon was just the best choice to move forward.
Why was that?
I think it was a combination of things, location, Coach Cristobal, and the culture and the mindset and the mentality that he's brought out here. You know, the talent on the roster, and, you know, I've been a part of four conference championships at the last five schools I've been at. And I really think that Oregon, once again, with the talent, with the culture, the conference, you're kind of on the precipice there of cracking into that Final Four. And that's one thing in 22 years of coaching I haven't had an opportunity to do, is play for the big one. So, you know, that was kind of part of the allure as well.
Well, I was going to say, now you're also in a situation, maybe for the first time, you're joining a program already on top of its conference. What's the interview process like? What's that conversation when you don't need to go in and say, I'm going to overhaul things by doing X, Y, and Z. I'm going to dramatically fix an offense. But rather, here's how I can give it a new sort of punch. What's that conversation like?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I have really not thought of that. You know, at Mississippi State, you know, hadn't had one winning conference record in, I think, 21 years, I believe, and hadn't won the conference since 1941. So that was certainly something we were looking to try to build, you know, into a championship program. And at Penn State, you know, we were, you know, Coach had done a great job during those turbulent times of, you know, I think 6-6 back-to-back years, and then we kind of broke through there, and then at Fordham. So, you know, that's not something I had thought of. But in the interview process, it really kind of wasn't about that. And Oregon had been successful last year offensively, but what can we do? And Coach uses the term to elevate the standard. You know, what can we do offensively, not only to keep the ship rolling, but to improve upon it?
Something I think is fascinating, hearing some head coaches talk about bringing a coordinator in to run the team system, not necessarily the coordinator system. And so now that you're on the job, do you get the sense that Oregon fans will see a familiar offense with your spin on it, or like a capital J Joe Moorhead offense, however that's defined?
Yeah, and I think that the change won't be as visible to the casual fan as it was at Penn State, where it was more of a conversion between a pro style and a spread. I think a lot of the personnel groupings, I think it'll look most similar in the run game to Oregon from 2019. I think the biggest difference you'll see is in the pass game and some of the RPO things. But yeah, the incredibly experienced and talented staff, you know, Coach Mirabal, Coach Williams, Coach Mastro, you know, bringing in Coach McClendon from South Carolina, and Coach Cristobal's expertise as the offensive line. And you know, they ran the heck out of the ball last year. You know, we had the SEC's leading rusher, and I think we're second or third in a league in rushing 2 years in a row. And then, you know, going back to Penn State and Fordham even before that, you know, we want to be able to run the ball successfully. But I think, you know, our willingness and ability to throw the ball down the field in the pass game, that'll probably be the biggest thing that is probably a difference that people will see.
Well, I was going to say, I'm sure there's a common thought among Oregon fans or college football fans paying attention. You know, if Joe Moorhead can do what he did for Saquon Barkley or Kylan Hill or Chase Edmonds going back to Florida, Mike Gesicki, you know, whoever, I'm sure that's something you've spoken to in job interviews. But how much of your thinking is that's what we did because we had those guys, and how much is this is who I am as a coordinator, depending on what kind of guys I have?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both. Ultimately, it's players, not plays. It's not what the coaches know. It's what the players can execute. So, you know, C.J. Verdell, you know, obviously a great offensive line. You know, breaking in the new quarterback, some great tight ends, a good receiving core. So we, you know, I went watched every snap of Oregon season last year offensively, and then you know we met for a long time as a staff heading into spring ball. Got through four installs, so I'm very confident. And you don't want to be stubborn or hard-headed, but I think it is a good mesh of the scheme that I and we as a staff would like to run relative to the personnel that we have. You know, in Mississippi State, you know, we had to be more run heavy because that's where we were strong. But I think we have an opportunity here to be balanced, just like everywhere else I've been. Maybe outside of UConn, we were probably a little run heavy at UConn.
And as well, you should. I mean, Jordan Todman had a fantastic season in 2010.
Andre Dixon, Anthony Sherman. I mean, that offensive line. I think in 2009, Dixon and Todman were the only 2,000-yard rushers that were on a non-option-based team, and then Jordan was one of the top rushers in the country in that 10 season. But yeah, they're phenomenal backs, and I think Sherman's still in the league, if I'm not mistaken.
How do you start to evaluate new players, new personnel? Obviously, with Mario Cristobal's background, and you have the returning Outland Trophy winner in Penei Sewell, are you looking at things from the inside out and saying, this is what we have on the line, this is how it will dictate what we do as we look at the passing game, as we look at the running game? You know, do you have a luxury that you are dealing in such a, I guess, an offensive line forward grouping at this point?
Yeah, I think games are won up front, regardless of the league. You know, losing four or five starters, you know, that's something where we feel comfortable with the people who are replacing them. It's just right now, a lack of repetitions. But if you're going to start somewhere with an anchor, the Outland Trophy, there's certainly a good spot. So, you know, we feel good about the guys that we have. It's just a matter of getting them practice and reps in the system, and hopefully we'll be able to do that sometime soon.
You mentioned changing what the passing game will look like. That'll be the thing that looks most different. What did you see? And, you know, obviously Justin Herbert gets taken in the top 10 and they finish really successfully this season. What did you see from the passing game last year? And where did you see, I suppose, opportunity for evolution?
Yeah, the one of the things is we went back and kind of watched the game tapes and watched the cutups, is I think that Oregon was really proficient in the screen game last year. And not just bubble screens, but double screens, wide receiver screens, you know, a bunch of really neat stuff there. And then some things in the play action game that I thought were very efficient and effective. And I think that the part where we're going to try to improve the most is, I guess, we want to be balanced, we want to be efficient. And then the thing we need to improve on the most, I think, is the explosiveness, you know, our ability to take advantage where people are crowding the line of scrimmage, you know, and create one-on-one matchups on the outside. To scheme it up and get that thing thrown over people's head.
Essentially, what you are is a teacher. And obviously, as a teacher, you're only going to be as successful as your students are at learning and applying. So you're obviously tasked with both coaching and finding players to coach. How do you find and develop good learners?
Yeah, I think part of that comes in the recruit process, you know, as you're going through and evaluating guys. And it's not just, you know, the height, the weight, the speed, the football ability, but, you know, how much do they love football? What's their IQ relative to the game and their commitment to the preparation aspect of it? But, you know, you've got to teach to the understanding of the guy in the room who understands it the least and kind of work from there. So you're right. And I hold that kind of title as a teacher, you know, with great respect. And I think you really, if they're not getting it, generally speaking, it's not the player, it's the coach. So you got to find a way in a generation where kids all learn differently and most effectively kind of right. Communicate the information.
How do you get a sense for, I suppose, what players already know when you're coming into a new program? And obviously, you know, they spoke a different language last year. They certainly, every coach teaches differently, so they learned in a different way, perhaps. How do you get a sense for what they already know? And is that important, or do you like, you know, starting from square one with everybody so everybody's on the same page?
Yeah, a lot of it's translation, and you'll start with bigger group meetings and kind of talk about general philosophy and, you know, broad strokes ideas, and then break it down into your positions and, hey, you know, we're running this play and this is who we're reading, or this is what we call this coverage. What did you call it? And just kind of ask more open-ended questions for them to explain, you know, rather than talking with them rather than at them. And I think when you have a good discourse and dialogue in the room, you know, generally speaking, that provides the coach or the teacher with a pretty good base of understanding, you know, kind of fundamentally technique-wise and scheme-wise as well.
Do you ask those same questions in the recruiting process to get a sense for players? Obviously, you're both trying to convince them to come play for you, but at the same time, you're trying to convince yourself that they would make sense as a person in your program. Are you asking them questions to get a sense of how they would respond to what you would ask of them?
I think you try to as much as you can, but I do think it's, in my opinion, most critical at the quarterback position.
Okay.
With what you're asking kids to do at this level, and not just in the pass game, but in the run game, there has to be a certain level of commitment to the preparation aspect of it. I tell them it's not a position, it's a lifestyle. And you can be good and be a part-time quarterback, but the ones who generally exceed and excel. And there was a real good article I read online a couple of days ago by kind of some of the measurable and kind of statistics go into kid in his high school senior year and then how that carries on through college and into the pros. And certainly some of it's going to be subjective, some of it's going to be objective, but you try to make as informed of an evaluation as you can.
Where do you think you've gotten stronger? Where do you think you've gotten better as somebody looking for quarterbacks and, you know, looking for what traits matter to you? What does your evolution look like as a quarterback and recruiting evaluator?
I think it's compiling all the information and then, you know, getting the kid on campus and there's something to having the kid in the room, looking at him eye to eye and just kind of getting the feel of that, you know. Like I said, when a quarterback walks in the room, you shouldn't have to ask if it's a quarterback. Now that's not the deal breaker, but you know, you talk about the height, the weight, the speed, and then there's a series of things in our evaluation process, arm strength, touch, accuracy, you know, poise in the pocket. You know, I want to know their record. I want to know completion percentage, touchdown interception ratio, you know, rushes, yards, touchdown, all those things. And it's, you know, it's, and that's what I guess they call it, the inexact science. You know, you miss sometimes, but you try to make, like I said, as informed of a decision as you can based on all the information that's available.
Will you, when you're recruiting, will you show cut-ups to a receiver, a running back, a quarterback, and say, this is how we, you know, this is how we're going to use you at the X position, and we're going to hammer defenses using this route? Will you sort of give that visual element? Does that seem to help?
Yeah, absolutely. Particularly when you're coming from a place where you weren't there the year before, and, you know, guys want to know about, and rightfully so, utilization in the scheme. And, you know, there's no better way, and we have, you know, film from, you know, all the different places I've been and backing it up by statistics and numbers. And, you know, when they can kind of, it's easy to tell them, and to talk about what you recall from what you hear, you know, what you repeat, what you write down. I think they call modalities of learning, but I think for them to visually see it on the screen, okay, here's the X receiver, here's the route, here's what it's called, here's how we're going to get you the ball. And this is what the production at this position has been. I think that's, it provides, you know, you talk about decision-making criteria, it provides the kid, you know, the information he needs, you know, relative to the scheme.
One of the things you're credited with, and I think rightfully so, is popularizing and taking the RPO game and moving it forward, be it at Fordham, be it at Penn State, wherever. And when you look at, and there's a school of thought now that running backs are as important as ever, but not necessarily because the running game is as important as it's ever been, but more the versatility of a running back, the ability to create mismatches out of a running back is more important than ever. Is that something you subscribe to, that perhaps running the ball isn't what it used to be, but the value of the running back is as important as it's ever been?
Yeah, I think if a guy has that kind of positional flexibility to either catch the ball out of the backfield or line up in the slot, that makes you tougher to defend. But historically, we've been, you know, a team that wants to get the ball to the back, you know, in the traditional way. But also, in year two at Penn State, where people were crowding the box, we had to find ways to get Saquon on a perimeter, like you remember from the Michigan game, or some of the others line them up in the slot. And we were able to really grow some things in the RPO game at Mississippi State that, you know, to the casual, like I said, people may not even know it's an RPO. But to me, the RPO system is really designed to improve your rushing and then take advantage of throws when people are overcrowding at the line of scrimmage.
Something that's, and you mentioned that, the sort of the positionless aspect, and it used to be that a tweener type player was seen as a negative or a weakness, and now it's almost an opportunity to find a position, to find a challenger, to find multiple positions to sort of feature that player, almost like in basketball, how you have, you know, teams going small. Is that something that can be developed or taught, or do you just need to get lucky with a player built a very specific way?
Yeah, I think the two positions you've probably seen that show up the most is quarterback, where you have the kind of the dual threat guys, you know what I mean, who are able to beat mm-hmm. you with their arms and their legs. But I think where you're seeing it the most, and I think we've done a pretty good job, is at tight end, you know what I mean, where they're traditional, you know, guy, three-point stance, you know, next to the tackle, you know, blocking two-back power 50 times a game, you know, those days are just about over, you know what I mean? But guys like Mike Gesicki, Travis Kelce, you know, all those guys who can do those things but also line up off the ball, line up in the slot, you know, line up as one or two and get those mismatches. I think, you know, the tight end position is the one that's really allowing offenses to have a great deal of flexibility without changing personnel.
Would you say that's a priority in what you're looking to do at Oregon, is really maximize what the tight end can do in the offense?
I do. And, you know, we've got a bunch of good ones, and unfortunately we've only had four practices to see. But
right.
I think we did the study. I think over the last 10 years, the tight ends in this offense have averaged 45 catches a year. So it's always been a very integral part of our system, and not just, like I said, because they have to block like a lineman and catch like a receiver. So anytime you can find those mismatches and, you know, create opportunities for those guys to get the ball down the field, I think that's always important.
You've now had a number of assistants and GAs, and I know a lot of people now know about, you know, the coaching relationship and the friendship you have with Joe Brady, who was so successful for LSU last year. They go on to become coordinators and head coaches and really succeed, and you've worked with a lot of successful people on both sides of the ball. How much of your creative relationships with former colleagues continue when you're no longer working together in the same room together? Like, will you watch tape of what they're doing and how they're tweaking maybe something they learned with or from you?
Yeah, I think everybody saw enough of LSU the last year. But I was actually texting with Joe Brady today a little bit earlier. But yeah, I mean, you look at the guys in that Penn State room, and you know, Coach Huff at Alabama, Ricky's now the head coach at ODU, Josh at Michigan, Joe Brady, I mean, and so on down the line. Those are the great things about the profession. It's not just the wins and the losses and all those things, but the relationships that you form. And, you know, I've just been very fortunate to work for a bunch of great head coaches and then also have a bunch of great guys, you know, on our offensive staffs who have kind of taken the system and kind of tweaked it to their own and grown to have a ton of success. It's very rewarding.
What's your idea collection process like? Obviously, it's players over plays, something you mentioned earlier, but are you constantly scouring? Do you have GAs and, you know, quality control guys and, you know, analysts? Are they constantly scouring? Are you telling people to look for, you know, what is this team had a ton of success in the passing game? Would you give me some cut-ups? Is that like a year-long process? Is that an off-season process? What is that creative collection look like for you?
Yeah, that kind of went to the wayside a little bit this year just because
of I'm sure.
how everything has fallen. But that's usually when during the month of the spring evaluation period, kind of that last 2 weeks, April and May, is when you kind of forge the GAs and the analysts. But we usually talk about it and say, all right, these are the teams we want to study. And while we're out on the road recruiting, those guys are breaking down the film. And then when you come back in June, after you watch your own cut-ups, then you do your off-season studies, and then as you're building your menu for fall camp, that's usually when you integrate some of the ideas of the teams that you studied. And, you know, there's a scheme or two or three that are kind of, you know, fit what you do. I mean, there's a bunch of tremendous ideas out there, but a lot of them aren't just a great – you just got to make – you want to make sure not only are you studying the right people, but they're ones that if you're going to incorporate the idea that it's relatively seamless into your scheme.
So I assume you've had some time on your hands. Who have you watched? Who have you been impressed by if you've had the opportunity to watch any cut-ups?
We haven't I've been doing more opponent study and watching ourselves than off-season study, just because there's not going to be time to integrate it, you know, and that's the one thing, you know, talking to some people there, you really got to be judicious in your approach now with no spring ball. You get some walkthroughs, then you get fall camp. You know, you're really, I don't think personally you're going to be able to expand the idea base, particularly with the year one offense. You're going to need to kind of narrow it down to get the necessary reps, you know, during camp to kind of hit the ground running week one.
So not just for Oregon, but for, I assume, pretty much every school, especially ones with perhaps new coordinators. Do you anticipate, you know, if everything goes off, as I think everybody hopes this fall, do you anticipate a lot of sort of simplified playbooks across the sport?
Oh, man, conventional wisdom would probably dictate that. I don't, you know, don't want to kind of make a generalization, but
sure.
You know, to me, it'll come down to culture. It'll come down to scheme, but most importantly, the execution of the scheme. And in a lot of ways, simplicity always helps with that.
So now what's next, as far as you can tell, with installation and practice?
You tell me.
I mean, what do you know? What right now, like, what are you doing next week? What are you doing tomorrow? What is on the schedule?
I mean, we've had kids come back to campus kind of in waves, just like everybody else. But we're not going to be able, based on the NCAA calendar, start positionally meeting with them again until a little bit further down the road. So, you know, right now we're recruiting our tails off. We're kind of watching the things we did in spring ball, kind of anticipating that time when we're going to be able to get back together with them. And, you know, then really, I'm going to say it's a refresher course, but you're not, there's 4 days worth of spring cut up. So you're not going to do that. So you're going to kind of take that proposed spring ball installation calendar that you had, and we're kind of modifying it to get it ready for those walkthroughs and for fall camp.
Can you be sending out, you know, iPad playbooks? Can you be sending out notes? Like, what is the process like to keep players sort of engaged intellectually with what they can expect come fall camp?
You know, we kind of cut the time. You know, you obviously know there's discretionary weeks and things like that where you're not able to get with them, and we certainly adhere to all of that. But during the time, I think all the Zoom meetings that we've done the past, you know, whatever time frame was when we were allowed to,
right,
you know, really allowed us to slow down and kind of be very detail oriented in our teaching and approach. And sometimes we would have meetings where we would only get through two or three plays, and that was fantastic, because you were meeting so many times a week for a certain amount of time that you weren't rushing to get it taught, to get on the field and practice it. You were really not bound by any constraint of, you know, getting on the field, if that makes sense. So you could really, really slow down the teaching of it. And I thought in very difficult times, that was a positive aspect of it.
And something that hasn't slowed down, because it never will slow down, is recruiting. So you're new to Eugene, you're new to a program, you're asked, and, you know, I'm sure it's difficult enough to sort of hit the ground running with something that's at least at first unfamiliar, but you're convincing kids to come play for you, come play in a system that they haven't really fully seen with the personnel that you now have. How has recruiting been in this new world? Obviously, Oregon has really done a great job thus far, but, you know, for you personally, what has that experience been like?
It's been fantastic. And I remember, you know, a few years ago, the big question was, can the guy from Pennsylvania come to Mississippi and recruit?
Yep.
And we responded with three top 25 classes and three of the highest ranked classes in school history. So to me, there's, you start with how much positive, you know, the city, the school, you know, the success, Coach Cristobal, you know, the offensive scheme, you know, winning a Rose Bowl, you know, finishing number five in the country. And then, you know, certainly our track record of success in the system over the years. I think you combine all those things and, you know, makes Oregon a very, 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 very attractive destination for kids who are looking.
All right. Final question. What have been your impressions in this short time of Eugene, Oregon, your new hometown? You know, have you found meals you like? Have you found parks to walk a dog? You know, have you found at least some sort of routine in a very strange time with a brand new job?
You're begging for routine, because it's like Groundhog Day. But no,
yeah.
I mean, it's incredibly temperate. I mean, you're situated in Eugene, that the ocean's 45 minutes to the west. You know, there's mountains and trails and kind of outdoorsy stuff, which coming from Pittsburgh wasn't really kind of my deal, but my family likes that. So as long as they're happy with that part of it, I'm happy. But yeah, certainly it's a, when I say unique in a very positive way, just because there's so many different things to do here, we've really kind of taken to Eugene pretty quickly.
Joe Moorhead, thank you very much for your time and good luck.
Appreciate it, Dan. Thank you very much.
All right. That was my conversation with Joe Moorhead. Thank you again, of course, to Joe. And thank you to all of you for listening to the show. Always just a thrill to nerd out about all things X's and O's and putting together a team and recruiting, and especially the different world that we now live in and how coaches are trying to navigate everything as they prepare, hopefully, for a season. And seriously, thank you for listening. If you like the show, please, by all means, share it with friends, like the really, really good friends you have. Send them a link. Tell them to subscribe. If you like it, slap it on Reddit, slap it on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, whatever. Every little bit helps as we ramp things up. Follow us, of course. It's Solid Verbal pretty much everywhere. You look up Solid Verbal on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, you're going to find us. You're going to find our very handsome mugs. We did post a picture of, I think it's my senior picture and I think Ty's senior picture, because we did our junior prom show earlier this week and the newsletter went out this week. If you haven't subscribed to that, please do check it out. It's on solidverbal.com. It's called the Newsletter of Intent because we're cheeky that way. So for Ty, my name is Dan. Thank you for listening. We will see you next week. Stay solid and peace.